Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable! Mayweather makes a pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's fact. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
This week, we have a very special guest. She is definitely known in the Southern California boxing scene, and now she's making her moves in the MMA scene, not just in Southern California, but throughout the world, as she's been to numerous, multiple MMA events in her short time there. Jane Murcia from BZA PR, a senior account executive with BZA PR, joins us this week. Thank you for joining us, Jane.
Thank you for having me.
We appreciate it. So I know this has been in the works for about a month or so. We've been messaging you back and forth, so we definitely appreciate your time jumping in. I'm sure our local listeners from the LA area, especially listening to this, know exactly who you are. But for our listeners outside of California primarily, and then our listeners all around the world, like the UK, we have like 45% UK listeners. That's why Mike's so happy right there. So for our listeners, you know, in the UK and everywhere else around the world, tell them who you are. How did you start? How did you get into PR? And pretty much walk us through your career up until today.
Yeah. So I have a very unique story getting into PR and ops. Like you mentioned, I work right now in a sports PR management company. We don't just do MMA, but we also work with the NHL. We work with Showtime Boxing, MGM. We work with the NFL. So you name a sporting event, you could probably count on BZA being there. They are recognized pretty well here in the U.S. and around the world throughout the various events that we put together. But it's funny because I work in sports. When in college and even in high school, like my trajectory was to become like a doctor.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, as you can probably tell by the last name, mm-hmm. I'm a first generation, American. My mom is from Mexico. My dad is from El Salvador. So you have your typical, you know, American life, like, you know, seeking a better life story. My mom came here when she was like 16, 17 years old. And my dad came here when he was like the same age. And my story actually begins with them because they had such high hopes and like aspirations for their kids. And, you know, as immigrant children, you know, you're like going to be a doctor, you're going to be a lawyer, you're going to be something productive in society. So PR and ops wasn't even in my periphery. I didn't even think that it was a career path. And so throughout my high school career, I was part of this medical program called ROP. So by the time I graduated high school, I was already a certified medical assistant. I worked in the emergency room in my hometown of Palmdale, woot woot, 661. and my whole life was centered around helping people and wanting to make a difference through the medical field. And so I worked so hard in high school. Like I was valedictorian. I got like almost like full grant scholarships to the university I went to, which was UCLA. And when I first got to UCLA, and this goes back to equity issues where, you know, you come from a poor neighborhood and you come from schools that aren't as equally resourced. You know, my first language was Spanish, had trouble navigating culturally a big university like UCLA. And here I am, baby Janie, going through her first, you know, science classes because I was pre-med wanting to go to med school. And I failed my first chemistry class. And it was like this huge wake up call, like, oh my goodness, I am a tiny fish in this big pond. And it kind of was like a wake up call because I was just like, oh, do I even want to do this? Is the medical field even like my thing? And it just really kind of made me stop and question, like, okay, what were the dreams that my parents had for me? And what were the things that they wanted for me? And what are the things that I want for me? Like, what are my natural talents? What are my natural inclinations and whatnot? And so I failed that chemistry class, but I was just like, you know what? I'm going to like push through. Like, I don't know what else I want. So as that, like halfway through my UCLA career, I like got through all my science classes and I was doing pretty good. Like, I was solid, you know, I bounced back from failing that class. Like, again, that same question, like, is this really for me? I don't know. Like, yes, I love helping people. At that point in time, I was working at the hospital Ronald Reagan. I was doing research. For example, this big research project I was working on was studying the effects of PTSD and substance abuse in Latino communities. Mm-hmm. So I was like interviewing these boys who were, you know, addicted to cocaine and meth and all these drugs, and trying to figure out, you know, what mental health therapies would help them, you know, let kind of like take off their dependence. Mm-hmm. And so I'm doing all this work in this space and I'm loving it. It's good work, but I'm like, my heart still isn't in it. Like, it's dope ass work. Like, I feel like, you know, we're doing something big. And so my junior year, I was studying abroad in Argentina, and one of my scholarships was cut just because of I was going into my senior year. And I was just like, at that point, I had two jobs already. So I had two jobs, working at the hospital, working in research. And I was just like, how the fuck am I going to make ends meet? Because I don't depend on my parents. Ever since I moved out and went to the university, like, I always hustled, like, to pay my rent, pay my bills and whatnot. And so I like just start Googling, like, what jobs can I do on the weekends that I can help, like, you know, that I could do to like pay for my like rent and stuff. And for some reason, I was just like, well, I like to talk a lot and I love people. And I was just like, well, maybe I should like look into like events, because I loved watching the Kardashians. And I saw, like, you know, you see Mindy Weiss, this is like the girly side of me. Right. Yeah, you see like Mindy Weiss, like, or, you know, organizing these huge events. And I was just like, I really love that stuff. Like, that gets me going. And so I start like Googling like internships for PR, paid internships for PR and events. But I didn't tell anyone because I didn't want anyone to freak out for me. Cause I knew like my friends would be like, you know, Jane, don't worry about it. Like, I got you. Like, I wanted to fight like for my own, you know, my own stuff. And so I like had it like in my heart. I was just like, God, like, I just like need another job, like at least like 10 hours, like extra a week. And one of my Bible study leaders from my church, she like randomly messaged me and she was just like, hey, my friend is looking for someone to be an intern at her PR agency.
Wow.
And she was like, they need someone who speaks Spanish, like, and it's for Oscar de la Hoya.
Wow.
And so I was just like, I didn't tell anyone that, like, I was struggling, that I was like, that this was going on in my heart. And I was just like, I obviously responded to her yes, and I sent her my resume. And like, I didn't hear back for weeks. And I was just like, okay, God, like, I guess not. And I'm still in Argentina. So like, I was just kind of like, I can't do anything at this moment because I'm not in the States to, you know, go in and do interviews. So I'm just like, okay, like, once I get back, like, you know, we have our goals to like find something. I come back from Argentina, and like within 2 weeks, I think I commented on that friend's Facebook page or something. And I left a comment on like her kid's pic. And I was just like, oh my gosh, so cute. And I commented right underneath this person that was supposed to look at my resume.
Oh, wow.
And she ended up calling me that night and was just like, oh, hey, I knew that you were in Argentina. Like, I was waiting to get back to you. Like, and she ended up like setting up like a phone interview for like that time next week. Like within the next week, I had an in-person interview for the internship. And then like 2 days later, I got the like, yes, like you got this.
Wow.
So like, it was literally like God, like put like that, like desire in my heart. Mm. And it was like within months came true. And it was like the strangest thing that has ever happened to me, but it was perfectly aligned because at that point I was like going back and forth of like, okay, I know now for sure that I don't want to go to med school. Like, is it law school? Is it public administration? Do I want to go and like, you know, fight the people and like, you know, do civil advocacy? Like, you know, I was still trying to figure out. So this internship, which ended up turning into my first job, was with Mercury Public Affairs. And so we did everything from like political campaigns to like lobbying to Oscar De La Hoya stuff to event planning and construction, like you name it. And like our company was there and we were so well connected within the city. And so I really got a taste of everything. And so what ended up happening though was that Golden Boy was like my biggest client. And so they kind of like absorbed me into their team, and the vibes were just there. My best friend who still works there, Carlita, Joel, Gio, Jackie, like all the people there at Golden Boy, they just kind of like accepted me and they're just like, come here. And quite honestly, it didn't feel sometimes that I worked for Mercury. It felt like I worked for Golden Boy, just based off of all the work and all the events that I did. And yeah, so I was there up until like 2019, doing Canelo fights. Like I remember my first fight that I did with Golden Boy was in 2015. It was the Lucas Matisse fight, where he got his eye.
In Carson. In Carson, California?
In Carson, yeah. That was my first fight that I did. But I fell in love through Golden Boy with sports PR and events. And I learned so much from all my different mentors, from Rachel Charles, who I'm sure you all know too, is also a staple in boxing PR, Monica Mendez, who's now with Angel City. So you have all these heavy hitters that I was sitting in rooms with and learning from. And I was just like absorbing it like a sponge because they had so much wisdom. And it was a feeling that I didn't have for a job in like years since I had worked in the emergency room back at home in Palmdale. And so it just kind of ignited this fire in me. And then Mercury ended up splitting ways with Golden Boy. And then I was just kind of like, oh, I had that like that same like crisis, like, oh, what do I want to do? I kind of don't like this work anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I went back to work at the hospital, and I worked for UCLA Health. And I worked for UCLA Health during the global health pandemic. and doing research and publishing all the different things that we as people could do to prevent the spread of COVID, and did a lot of work with all of our sports teams with my former coworker, Eric Glasner, you know, Dodger stuff, Lakers stuff. And then went and from there went to work for a nonprofit. And then that's when the call for Canelo came in and they're like, hey, like, we need help. Can you like help us? And I was just like, I'm your girl. I got you. And then it was kind of like my reentry back into sports. And it was like peanut butter and jelly. Like we were slam dunking together. And it was, it reminded me of how much fun I had doing all the sports stuff. And at the last fight that I was with Saul at, which was the Canelo Plant fight, that was when I ran into Steve Brenner, who is the owner of BZA. And he was just like, I offered you a job 5 years ago and you didn't want it. Do you want to come and work with me or not? And like this time I said yes. So yeah. And then the rest is history. So now, and now I'm with BZA doing all of the fun stuff that I mentioned earlier. So that's kind of like my genesis story of how I got into PR. I had so many closed doors that kept propelling me to where I am now. You know, a lot of people think that, oh, if I could, there's like that saying like, oh, just keep knocking on doors until they open for you. That's how it felt like these past couple of years. Just like, oh, like this one's not for me. Okay, move on to the next one. This one's not for me. That's how it really was to get to this point of comfort in my career. But yeah.
Going back to the your time at Golden Boy, you said your first fight in Carson, California, the StubHub Center at that time.
Yeah.
Was the Lucas Matisse fight. Was that against Victor Postol? Was that the yep. Postol fight, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you remember? Obviously, the biggest thing, that being your first event, boxing event, you know, with Golden Boy, with somebody like Oscar De La Hoya. But what else stands out in your mind from that night or that day?
So, like I said, I was in Argentina, right, when I was going back and forth trying to find this internship. The first people that I helped out were from Argentina.
Wow.
And like, I was sharing with them my experience of how it was being abroad. And it turned out that the same area that I was living in Buenos Aires was where they were from. And it was just kind of like a little kiss from God, just being like, see, you're in the right place. Like, these experiences helped you connect with these old Argentinian men, and you didn't even realize that it was being used that way. And yeah, so that was like the thing that stood out to me. I think the other thing that stood out was just the passion that goes into the sport on all sides. You know, you have the crazy fans. You have the reporters who are so incredibly passionate about the sport. You have the fighters who have been training and have the discipline. And I remember that was the night where he lost his eye, essentially. Like, he wasn't able to fight after that fight again the same way that he did before. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like a moment where it's just like, oh, you don't play boxing. Like, right. This is like a very serious sport. Which to me, like, obviously to us, like, yeah, like, duh, Jane. Yeah. But as like a baby who had never had that type of access to that sport before, it was kind of eye opening. Like, oh my gosh, like, you're hurt. Ouch. that was like one of the things that stood out to me too. Like, all the, like, I went from like working in a hospital trying to help people and trying to heal people, and here they are going into the ring, beating the shit out of each other.
And give us a breakdown. So a fight gets announced by Golden Boy. you got, I don't know, a few weeks before. Kind of give us a breakdown of what you do as PR.
Yeah. So, say like I'm like working with, and not just like, and this applies to like all combat sports, right? So like they give us like the main event, like, okay, we're going to do this main event. This is where we're going to do, like have the venue. We coordinate with our ops team and we kind of put together from the groundwork this event. So, for example, if it's a small Belasco fight, right? You know, ops is coordinating with the theater. I'm telling ops, I think we're going to have like, you know, 30 media members show up. Can we make sure that we have them taken care of, get, you know, access to power, access to Wi-Fi, get some, you know, tablecloth, like basic event operations set in place to take care of our PR team. And then in addition to that, it's also the announcement, right? So making sure that all parties that are involved in the announcement coordinating with the teams to make sure that they have like their quotes, their statements out in the public, making sure that your press release is written and doesn't have typos, which is a lot harder than what it sounds like.
Right.
Because everyone has something to say and everyone has an edit and the way that they want to say it. And then making sure that all of, you know, the who's who knows what's going on, right? Sending it out through email blasts, calling up people, making sure that they show up, setting up interviews, and making sure that the reporters have access to these fighters that you're trying to promote this event for. There's a lot of nitty gritty details that go into it and making sure that like people from all over the area know that this fight is going on. Right. And yeah, so that's kind of the nitty gritty. I don't know if that answers your question completely.
do you get chance to, obviously you've got to look after all that. And a lot of that is on fight day. So do you get chance to actually enjoy the event?
Sometimes. Depends. Because just like how we have our PR hat on, we also have to have our reporter hat on. So a lot of the times if I'm at an event, like I'm running and getting scorecards, I'm writing up a summary to send to, you know, reporters who weren't able to attend, writing up a summary that, you know, can help our digital team write up social posts. So I'm very much like on the grind during the event time. Like, I think the only time I've actually sat through and watched an event was when I was like a guest. Like, that's the only time I've been actually been able to enjoy an event, because you are running around. There's obviously reporters who have needs. They're like, if a fighter, for example, ends up winning a fight, you know, I'm taking them back, connecting them with a reporter who wants to get an interview with them after the fight, right? And then you know, most of the time after a big, for example, a Canelo event, we'll have a big press conference at the end. And that's like a huge, you know, lift, making sure that we have everything operationally to have that press conference. There's fight nights are not fun for us. I hope they're fun for you guys. That's what I would hope, but
kind of. I mean, we're also there to do a job too, but I'm sure yours is a lot more fast paced than ours is at that time. Talk about, you know, working. How was the first time meeting Oscar De La Hoya?
So meeting Oscar for the first time was, like, you don't get starstruck by him because he's so humble. Mm-hmm. He is someone who will say hi, hello to everyone. Like, he is not someone who walks with his nose up in the air. He is not someone who thinks he's all that and a bag of chips. And you've met him before. Like, if you sit down with him, like, he'll smile at you, you know, he'll engage with you. If a random fan runs up to him, like, he'll pose for pictures. Like, he has never been the type to to show an ugly side to him when he's on the job, you know? Mm-hmm. At least that's been my experience with working with him through the events. And it was really weird because, like, growing up, that was our hero, right? Mm-hmm. Especially in the Latino community, in the Latino Americano community, you don't have a lot of us who make it that far and who are a household name. And to see this household name in action, it was kind of a big deal. And it was kind of weird too, because he's not that much older than my dad. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like, it was just like seeing him like, oh, like what a difference, you know?
Right. Yeah. Right. What was the first event, especially when you got into that sports PR world with Golden Boy, what was the first event? And it could have been the Matisse fight, the first one that you ever did, but which one was it? Was it like maybe a Canelo fight, you know, one of those big extravagant events that you guys had to work on where you were there and you were like, oh, wow, this is, I can't believe I'm here.
I can't believe I'm here. I think was the Canelo Khan fight. Mm. We were in Vegas. And he had just knocked out Amir Khan. Mm-hmm. And hearing the crowd, the way that they screamed his name after he knocked him out, and then seeing his reaction, like making sure that he was okay, because Saul was scared after that, right? Like seeing these two different reactions take place at the same time was kind of like an inner body experience, because I was just like, I would be watching this on TV, you know, like I would be at home chilling with the carne asada, you know,
yeah,
with the chelas and all my tios, but I'm here inside the T-Mobile arena working this event. So that was my oh my God moment. And it was also a very scary moment, because we were worried about Amir Khan for a quick second, but that was definitely one of the my favorite oh my God moments.
What about talking about Canelo? We talked about how you meeting Oscar and, you know, him being humble and stuff like that. You know, Canelo, obviously his first language is Spanish, and yeah, you speak Spanish, you're fluent in Spanish. So I'm sure when you had to speak to him, he was obviously probably comfortable speaking to you, right?
I mean, yeah, he's a little bit more serious, and everyone kind of knows that. Like he's very much like disciplined on the job. I think it wasn't until seeing him in action at the gym where you kind of see those layers kind of peel off a little bit more. Because when I first started working with Golden Boy, I would only see Canelo on, you know, like we're here for the press conference, we're here for, you know, this media workout, and he would have his game face on. Yeah.
You said you work with lots of different stars, lots of different sports. Has there been anybody so far that you have been starstruck by?
That I haven't been starstruck by.
That you have been.
That I have been starstruck? That's a tough question, actually.
I mean, maybe the closest to starstruck, I guess.
The closest to starstruck. It was actually at the I think it was at the Cotto fight. It was in New York. We were in Madison Square Garden, and we had J Balvin and Bad Bunny. We had like a lot of reggaeton artists, because he's from Puerto Rico. Like we had a lot of that Puerto Rican representation. And I was in the elevator with J Balvin going back up. And all I wanted to do was like scream his name and be like, take a picture with me. But I kept it professional. I was just like, no, I'm on the clock. Like, I can't do that. That's the only person I've ever at that Cotto fight.
So not even a boxer. It was a musical artist.
Yeah. I think that's why. I feel like because I've seen the ins and outs of these boxers' lives, the kind of or I guess like any athlete, to be quite honest, there's no athlete I think that I could meet that I would be starstruck by, because to me, they're normal people. Like to me, it's just, I know that you're waking up at, you know, 4, 5, 6 in the morning to go out and train. I know that you're starving yourself. Like I see all the realities, and you know that I'm starving myself, and you know that I'm like waking up early to, you know, help promote you. So like, there's like this relationship that we naturally have. Whereas, you know, the rappers and the reggaeton artists, I'm just like, you know, I don't know. So like, they just seem like godlike to me. Right. But yeah, I don't know if that's a reasonable answer, but.
It is. We didn't say just boxers. We said anybody. No. So yeah. In terms of like, you know, the younger fighters who were coming up with Golden Boy at that time, you know, you had your Jojo Diaz at that time when you were there, especially starting with Golden Boy.
Yeah.
You know, you had, I think Ronnie Rios was right there and stuff like that. You know, out of all those guys, you know, they're still going as of today. Jojo is obviously world champion. Ronnie Rios is on that cusp. He's getting there. You know, what do you remember about that crop of those young guys who were coming up at that time when you first started?
Yeah. That's a good question. So I think this is how I met you, right? It was at those local fights, whether it was Belasco, Fantasy Springs, those small town fights where you saw these fighters come in with, you know, their 5-0 records, and you see them build up. Like I get when Alexis Rocha won, you know, a couple weeks ago as the main event card, I was there, and I remember that feeling of being like, I remember watching you make your pro debut years ago. And here you are, main event, pulled off this crazy win after coming back. You know, I think he had lost a fight previously. So coming back in and just dominating. And like, there's a sense of pride that you have because you know how hard and how serious they take it. Mm-hmm. Another person that's one of my favorites too that I saw pro debut was Virgil Ortiz. Mm-hmm. Like him. And I remember working on a story with him and his guitar skills.
Yeah.
And how, to me, like no one knew that like he was crazy on the guitar until our PR team was just like, oh, wait, that's kind of a cool story. Mm-hmm. We should get that out there. And the Desert Sun picked it up. They went to his house. Like they did a crazy, you know, story on him playing the guitar and how that helps him with his boxing. And seeing him come up the way he did, Ryan Garcia too. I remember his fights, Ryan's fights at the Belasco. Mm-hmm. No one remembers how he started, but that he made his, you know, grand entrance on the scene at a small little club in downtown LA. Mm-hmm. And it's been one of the biggest blessings to see these fighters come up and build up. And it's one of my favorite things about the local shows is because you really do get to see the rising talent that's coming out of the woodwork and all the local gyms that are putting in the work to make a name for themselves. I truly believe SoCal is the hottest place for boxing. Mm-hmm. You have so many gyms that, it like iron sharpens iron, you know, like, and yeah, so sorry, that was a long spiel into that, but I get excited when I think about my baby fighters that have come a long way.
So, you know, out of all those fighters that you've worked with, you know, even up until you worked with Canelo or anybody throughout your time in the boxing world, because obviously you guys as a PR team, you want these fighters to, you know, you need to talk to them to get a feel for them, to help them with their career, and then, you know, coordinate with media members, reporters, and what have you. Yeah. Was there any one fighter that kind of was like just so shy? You know, some people are just very, very shy. And does anybody pop into your mind where you're just like, oh, I need to pull it out of him?
I can't think of anyone like at the top of my head. I think Virgil was a little bit more shy, but like he was once you got him comfortable, he would talk a little bit more. Alexis was very shy. Now that I remember Alexis was a little shy. Now, that's why it was so surprising when Virgil dropped off as the main event for that show and Alexis posted that video saying, like, let me be the main event.
Yeah.
I remember seeing that video and I was just like, my baby Alexis is doing this type of shit. Like, that was the last person I would imagine doing like some sort of call out like that. But seeing him get his confidence, like it was cool. So Alexis is definitely one of those shy ones that has come out of his shell a little bit more. Joshua Franco, he was also pretty shy at first. Let's see, who else from the gym? But yeah, Joshua Franco, Hector Danahara, like back then, mm-hmm. he was also pretty shy.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of these boxers, they don't want to, you know,
they're fighters.
They're fighters. Yeah. They're warriors. They don't want to talk about their personal lives and, you know, be cutesy. They're trained to kill in the boxing ring. that's what they're to do. So it's quite honestly an art form to be able to turn on the personality and then turn it off and become a pit bull in right. the ring. And that's why you see fighters like Oscar De La Hoya make it the way that they do, because they can turn it on and off, right? Turn on the personality when the cameras are on and turn it off when you're going into the ring. And the same thing with Saul now, right? Like Saul can turn on the personality now.
Mm-hmm.
He can turn it off. Mayweather too, right?
Yeah.
You think Mayweather is like thinking about doing interviews when he's in there trying to kill someone or, mm-hmm. you know, fight someone? No, you know, it's definitely an art form that these fighters have to learn as they learn how to promote themselves, you know?
Go ahead, Mike. Do you as a PR team, or do you know, do Golden Boy like take them aside and kind of train them?
So when I worked with Golden Boy, because now Ceci, who's at Golden Boy now, like it is part of the curriculum, so to speak, right? The boxing promotions curriculum to be able to do these interviews. And we start off small, right? You know, I'm not going to throw my baby boxer or MMA fighter. I'm not going to throw him to ESPN on the first day, right? It takes time. It takes practice. A lot of them will do, hey, do you want to talk to this YouTube blog? Get them comfortable. Mm-hmm. Get them used to sharing their story. Help them develop a story. A lot of these fighters don't know how to share a lot of those experiences in a concise way, right? And so being able to help them be like, this is your life narrative. These are some of your talking points, you know, how to share that. That takes time. And that's something that our team would work with them on. And then what I would assume that GVP does too, and any other boxing promotions company. I don't want to speak for GVP because I'm not with them anymore, but yeah.
You mentioned, you talked about that process and, you know, how you kind of have to develop them, especially if they're younger, you know, you kind of have to teach them the ropes to kind of go through the game like that. But who, you know, whether it was a younger fighter or maybe a little older who kind of came into the game and you guys had to, you know, kind of train from a media or PR perspective, who just kind of had that natural gift where you were just like, oh, okay, they know how we do it.
Oh, 100% Ryan Garcia. like Ryan Garcia, you didn't need to do anything with him. If anything, you had to be like, like let's leave that out.
Right.
Like Ryan just had Ryan had like Oscar's qualities, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where he just naturally understood social media. He naturally just understood how to carry himself. I think Ryan has an authenticity to himself that a lot of fighters still, it takes some time to develop. Ryan walked in already knowing a lot of this stuff. You didn't really have to worry about Ryan being personable or likable or how to share his story. He already knew what his story was. So he was probably the easiest of the fighters to be like, oh, he's good. If anything, take him away from the camera for a second. Get him away for a minute. Well, I say that lovingly because we all loved Ryan. But
right.
Yeah.
What about in terms of the go-to guy? Because obviously you guys would put some fighters on commentating gigs sometimes, you know, ringside or maybe for smaller shows or depending how significant the show is. Like JoJo Diaz has done it. He still does it sometimes. He does some commentary gigs. Did you guys have input on that? Like, we know when you guys wanted to put a fighter on a commentary gig like that?
That wasn't like our decision, because my role as the PR agency, because we were not in-house, a lot of those decision-making skills are left up to the in-house PR team. Because at that time, Mercury was reporting to Ramiro and then Cecilia. And then even right now through BZA, when I support a lot of my, you know, MMA friends, we do it through, we still take the lead of the in-house team to help support whatever PR needs that they have. So they might be the ones to point us, like point a fighter out and be like, hey, can you help with this person? But decisions like that, where it's like, oh, let's get them a commentating position. Like, we don't really have that input, but there are teams or PR people that do have that input.
And then going to the most, your most recent time in the boxing world with Saul Canelo Alvarez. When you first got to see him again after being gone for a couple years from the game, did he remember you? I mean, did he say like, oh, you're back, or yeah, welcome back, or anything like that?
Yeah, like, so the first event back with him was working an event for the Chinese theater. He had gotten his handprints on the Chinese theater. And I think one of the things that me and Saul always had was like this level of professionalism and just like naturally understanding each other of like, oh, I can read when you're comfortable. I can read you when you're not comfortable. And I think that when he welcomed me back into the team, he was just kind of like, it's actually funny. So the person who brought me in, Carla Diaz, she like was the one who like reconnected all of us together. And it was me, Saul, and Carla. And he was just like, Carla's going to teach you how I like every single little thing. So, but it was a very much a Mexican welcome of just like, oh, like it's more of like a, I know that you can do it, you know, like, I know that you're up for the challenge and stuff. So that, like, it wasn't even like a, I'm happy to have you back. It was more of a, like, get ready.
Right. So you did, your last one was Canelo Plant. When did you come in? Was it right after he left the zone and Golden Boy?
No, so he did the Kovalev fight. I think like my first fight was like back in Miami when he did the, and it was just like
Yildirim fight.
Right. And I wasn't even like fully in at that point. It was more of like, oh, let's see.
So you did Yildirim. You did Billy Joe Saunders.
Yes.
You did. I don't think you did Callum Smith, did you?
No, I did not do Callum Smith.
Yeah. Callum Smith. Okay, I think it was right before the Yildirim fight.
Yeah, it was right before.
So Yildirim, Saunders, Caleb Plant.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And then I went and switched over to VZA right after.
So which one which one stands out on your mind out of those recent events that you did? Is it the Miami one? Because I know he came out with a reggaeton
with J Balvin, artist, with right? The love of my life, J Balvin. So quite honestly, the one that sticks out to me the most is that Billy Joe Saunders fight, because it was like a tough fight week for me. And we were like in a bubble and we were going through like my friend had passed away that week. And I had to tap into like my Canelo senses,
right?
And just like, okay, I'm like fight week mode on right now. And then you had like the antics that Billy Joe Saunders' team like was doing. You know, we had like a dispute. Like he didn't show up for like their face offs and whatnot. And here I am as a PR person being like, oh, oh my God, this is the worst week ever. but it obviously was all good because it was the Canelo fight week, you know, you're there, right? And the excitement and seeing all the fans there. And but that Billy Joe Saunders fight week was a toughie.
Mm-hmm. So when you like we talked about, we keep repeating the plant fight. The end of last year was your last event, teaming alongside Canelo. Were you able to, you know, tell him thanks for having you on the team and, you know, working with him, or, you know, were you able to pretty much say goodbye to him?
Yeah. Like I think like at the end of the day, like the team knew that I had big aspirations, you know. I think I am naturally someone who wants to try a little bit of everything, right? There's like this sense of curiosity in me that's always just like, I want to conquer this. I want to conquer that. It's the reason why I took this job with BZA, because I was just like, I want to conquer MMA. I want to conquer the NFL. I want to conquer, you know, golf and tennis and volleyball. I want to see what all these different sports can bring and grow in this, and just really be able to sharpen my skills. And boxing is my first love and it will always be. And I think boxing was a great testing ground to see if I can make it in sports, because boxing is such a, I don't want to call it like a circus, but it kind of is.
Yeah.
Like where you are really tested and you get thrown into situations that you probably shouldn't be in. And you soon realize after going into different sports, you're just like, oh, so this isn't normal. this is something particularly unique about boxing. And that being said, learning from other sports and how they do things and how they approach different circumstances, I think the team knew that that's what I wanted for my own personal growth, to be a better publicist, to be a better event operations manager, to be a better everything. You kind of have to leave to grow, right? So they were obviously sad, but it's okay. And also the other thing about boxing is just like, you'll probably see me there. My best friend still is in boxing. I'll probably go if someone asks me to go help out. Like, I'm there. I can't say no. I can't keep away from the craziness.
Right.
And you touched on all the different sports that you work with now, the job that you're at.
Yeah.
Is PR done differently because you're aiming at different crowds of people for each sport?
Yeah, 100%. Because the thing that, and this is where the creativity of PR happens, right? It's just understanding who your audience is and how to speak to them. PR is very much tied to social media and marketing, where you have to learn what words to use, how delicate or how strong you need to come off. And there, it's an art form, right? It's just like how you read a certain article from one, you know, web page, and you go and you read a certain topic, that same topic somewhere else, it's completely different, right? Because they're targeted to different audiences, right? Teen Vogue is going to talk about, you know, the presidency different from USA Today or right. the New York Times. And it's the same thing with PR. These different sports have different people, audience groups that follow them, right? Like, let's take golf, for example. Like, yeah, golf is expanding its audience, right? But if you were to look at it, you'd probably say it's a generally Anglo, you know, 30s to, you know, 60s age range that follow the sport. You compare that to basketball, right? It's a completely different demo, right? You're looking more Latino, African-American, / Black, you know, you're probably looking at more younger audience too. You're looking at like teenagers to maybe people in their 40s. Like the demo changes, right? And being able to speak to all these different audiences, being able to connect with them and also talk about the issues that matter to them in the context of sports is a very delicate and a very, you have to approach with a lot of thoughtfulness, and you have to approach it with a lot of research and data. And it's not just like pushing out a story or just pushing out a press release, saying something, right? Like the one thing about PR that people don't get, and this goes back to my comment about you have to have a reporter hat on, is like you have to know how your words will affect the people who are reading it, right? You're not just reporting or sharing news, right? The way that you say something will have an impact, right? The way that I tell you as a reporter how someone won a fight or how someone like, you know, got beat up or how some, you know, like there are different ways to write that, like, you have to be careful and you have to be thoughtful. And there's a lot of politics at play with that too, right? So I think that's one of the bigger takeaways, is that it's not easy. Because you might piss someone off. You might write one sentence and the whole press release might be banging. And then that one sentence will piss someone off. And you, the next thing you know, it's all gone.
So with BZA, PR, obviously one of their main clients, or probably the main client, is Bellator MMA. And Bellator MMA is right behind the UFC in terms of global presence in the MMA world. You know, it seems like you've worked a couple events for them already and kind of been around that environment. What takeaways can you take away from being in the MMA world in these first couple of months that you've been there, whereas in comparison to your boxing time?
Going back to audiences, completely different audiences, completely different. I'm going to say reporting crowd too, right? I think the one thing I will say that is similar is the same. Like that same commitment to discipline and that same commitment to excellency and putting it all into the cage. Right. It's the same thing that I saw with fighters that would go into the boxing ring. I think that's one of the biggest standouts for me in this, while I've been at Bellator, BZA. Yeah.
So, you know, I forgot to ask this at the beginning when you were kind of talking about your beginnings and how you were in essentially the healthcare world for a little bit. And then you didn't tell people that you were looking into the PR side and an event coordinating. And because you said your parents, like, you know, you wanted to become a doctor and, you know, your parents had an expectation in a way. So when you finally told them, like, hey, I'm going to go do this and it's going to be with Oscar De La Hoya, what was that reaction like?
To be quite honest, they were not very happy. And even to this day, I remember telling my dad, like, oh, I'm going to, you know, go in like full-time sports PR. They just have this, how could I say it? They just want what's best for me. And they want me to be financially stable. They want me to, you know, build equity, to do all of the things that they weren't able to do. And I think everyone who has worked in sports, like, we're not millionaires. We're not making a lot of money here. A lot of us are scrambling still. And I think that for them, they saw me struggle so much at the beginning of my career, because when I first got hired, like, my salary, my first 2 years being working as an intern and working full time, I lived at poverty level. Like, I was not, like, I was making ends meet because I'm a fucking badass. And like, I made magic happen, you know, but like, there was no way a person could survive on my salary. Mm-hmm. And my parents saw that, and obviously they couldn't help me, right, to make ends meet. But I remember, like, my first year working, I split a studio with someone in LA, and it was like, I think the studio was like 800 square feet, like this tiny studio. I had a twin bed, so it was like we had two twin beds. We put up pipe and drape inside our studio apartment, so that way we could be like, have a little bit of like boundaries and space,
privacy,
and a little privacy, if that. And it was funny because, like, we had a little vanity, and whenever I felt like I didn't want to be around her, I would just lock myself in the vanity. But that's how much of a struggle it was to even have like personal space. And it hasn't been until this moment where it's just like, oh, I have like my West LA apartment, and, you know, I'm, you know, traveling and, you know, doing like well. But like, my parents have PTSD from me struggling so hard. And they're just like, are you sure you want to do this? Are you really sure?
Right. Well, Jane, you know, I think we've had you for like a good hour tonight. You know, we obviously don't want to take up too much more of your time, but we definitely appreciate, you know, your behind the scenes look into your life as a PR executive, and obviously you're still continuing your life in the boxing world. You never know, you might come back. You didn't think you were going to come back, and you went back for a little bit with the biggest star in the sport. So funny how that all worked out. But before we let you go, you know, go ahead and you know, plug anything that you have. You have your BZA PR, you have, you know, any social media, anything you have upcoming. You're currently in Vegas. Well, when people hear this, you're going to be probably back in LA already, but you're currently in Vegas as of today's recording for the NFL draft. So if you want to talk about that, the floor is yours. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, make sure to tune in to our next couple of Bellator fights. We have a couple of good ones. We have a show in Paris on May 6th. We also have a show in London. That's the following week. And then we have a Mohegan Sun June 24th fight there. Let's see. And then you can follow me on Twitter, Janie Murcia. I don't respond to everyone, but, you know, if you have questions about PR, I actually really do love sharing my story, because I think it is important, especially if you're really interested in getting into it, like, hit me up, because I love to give tips and tricks. And if you have any questions, you know, I'm here. I'm an open book. So reach me there. Obviously follow BZA on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. Hit us up there. That's the professional account. So yeah. Hit us up on LinkedIn, BZA, to hear any updates that we have through all our other clients, because it's not just Bellator that we have. We have NHL, Dodgers, yada, 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 like how I said earlier.
Yeah. No big deal, right? No big deal.
No big deal. NBD, NBD. but yeah, so follow us on LinkedIn. And then thank you guys so much for your time. I appreciate you guys inviting me, and I hope that I didn't bore anyone with like my silly details.
Oh, of course not. Of course not. We try to get, you know, obviously we get boxing guests and, you know, reporters and all that stuff, but we try to keep our ear to the ground for people who haven't really told their story in the boxing world. And I had told Mike a couple months ago, I was like, oh, Jane, especially when you pop back up with Canelo, that's when I was like, oh, I think she would do well. I was like, I think people want to hear her story. So we finally got you on, and I'm sure you'll be back on in the future here on The Last Round. So we definitely appreciate it.
No, thank y'all. I appreciate it.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.